You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and hey, it's April 1st, 2021. Well, economies come and go. The stock market is forever. If you've been watching it, you think, how much longer can it go on for? When is the merry-go-round going to suddenly jolt to a screeching stop and throw all the players off of it? Or is it going to do that? Or is it just going to go on forever? What do you think? I'd like to know your opinion. Send me an email to kl@carrielutz.com. Well, our good friend RC Peck is with us now. You find him at fearlesswealth.com. RC, it's great to have you back on. So, hey, market keeps going up and up and up. And well, now it looks like maybe it's hit some headwinds. Maybe it's going to retrace. Maybe we'll even have that thing called a bear market. What are you seeing here? What's your take on it?
Well, I think the first take is there is no bear market in front of us. I think people, because they're so connected to fear and hype and they're overexposed to information, they have forgotten that just 1 year ago-ish, we had the fastest stock market fall ever and the fastest stock market increase ever, right? So we've just come out of a pretty scary correction, crash, whatever you want to call it, drawdown. And the question I want to know is, okay, after one of those corrections or crashes, whether it's 34% in 30 calendar days or 58% in 18 months or 50% in 30 months, those are the last three crashes of the last two decades. What does the market do after one of these major kind of cleaning out? And the answer is it goes higher for a long period of time, years and years and years. So literally we can see, and I'm expecting the market to go higher somewhere between the next 5 and 10 years. Now, I'm not predicting that. I have no attachment to which direction it goes, but I want to counter everyone being sold that the market's going to crash in any moment and just point out that it just crashed. It just crashed a year ago. And the market likes to go higher after a major cleaning out period. And that's what we're in right now.
All right. But just because it's done it in the past doesn't necessarily mean it's going to always do it in the future. Records are made to be broken, right?
Yeah, I mean, we every day, or certainly every week, we hear something like, this has never happened before. Like, yes, that is called life. Life is filled with daily and weeklies. This has never happened before. So I'm not prescribing we drive the car looking in the rearview mirror. So I want to be clear. But what I am saying is there is some intuitiveness. Right, there's about 700 million people that have their money in the stock market, the richest 9% on the planet. Okay, so collectively, those 700 million people, collectively, they have a pretty good, you know, view on the 100th floor of the building. They can see out, you know, 6 months or 12 months. Can something happen? Of course. If 2020 told us anything, negative oil, you know, I mean, it told us anything can happen. But this idea that the end is near on a daily basis is at best exhausting and at worst makes you poorer.
So throw caution to the wind?
Absolutely not. Be smart. Follow price. Price direction is king or queen. And it is good to know a little bit about history. Like if some people don't know, the average amount of time the market goes higher after a major cleanout is somewhere between 5 and 10 years. Okay. Could it be 5 and 10 months? Yeah, but that would be a super outlier. So my suggestion is go with probability, go with history first. Don't close your eyes, but be aware of how on a collective basis, the stock market works and how it's very disconnected from the economy.
So is that something that's just happened recently? It's disconnect from reality, Or has it always been disconnected from the real economy from one extent to another?
I think it's been leading it for a century. The market bottomed way before we knew we were going to win World War II, right? So how did it know that? How did it know to stop falling in the middle of World War II? But it did. It figured out collectively, you know, things are going to get better, and it started pricing that in. How did the stock market know of the six companies that made parts, the six main companies that made parts for the space shuttle in the 80s? How did the market know within an hour which company made O-rings? And, you know, they knew that that was going to fail. Like, to me, there's a collective consciousness that's overlooked, because even those words sounds too airy-fairy or too woo-woo for most people. So there's an intelligence there.
All right. Collective unconsciousness. So that's a kind of spiritual look on things. I just want to talk about what you said about the O-rings, because it just so happens, RC, that I was at the NASA Museum in Cape Canaveral, Florida, the Kennedy Space Center. And interestingly enough, they had a whole shuttle display. They actually had, I don't remember which shuttle it was, if it was the Enterprise, one of the shuttles, they actually had it suspended and opened up. Oh, it was a really cool exhibit. And but they never had any mention of their failures. And that's the problem with history is, as they say, it gets written by the winners.
Yeah.
And when you look at World War II, you know, there were a lot of blunders made by the Allied forces, particularly our close ally, Winston Churchill, that led to the deaths, unnecessary deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, troops, citizens alike. So can the collective unconscious be incorrect here?
They can. I don't think over long periods of time they are. I think the problem that's tough for humans is we strive for zeros and ones, right? The way our brain is designed is either you run your butt off to not be killed by the thing with big teeth, or you get killed. There's no in between. There's no like, oh, let's kind of check it out. And so that fight or flight, that death or live, is designed in our brain. And as you know, you've been on this planet for decades, life is messy. And life is the messiest over the shortest term. And I think a war is as good an example as anything. I mean, a part that they probably shouldn't happen, but they're pretty messy. And even if you win, you know, there's a lot of sadness and loss. And it just seems like humans expect this very clean, if A, then B by C. And there is messiness in that. And that's what humans aren't good at, in kind of digesting or understanding when it comes to growing their money in the markets.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everybody would like an easy solution, a quick way to get rich and build wealth. And what you really should be looking at, maybe more so than that, is how to acquire wealth over time and actually hold on to it. As somebody who's done it, I always like to say I've made five fortunes in my life, or four fortunes, and I've lost 3.5 of them. Maybe I'm a number five now. So maybe I've lost 3.5 of them. So I'm on number five. You know, the old saying, it's so hard to make $1 million that some people don't even bother, and they're on their second million, right? And so, you know.
Well, and just think about it now. Like, so, you know, you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. Okay. And depending on which group you're in, we are hit with this like pornography of information. Of you go onto YouTube and it seems like everyone is worth $50 million and they're showing you their account balance, and they all seem to be about 30 years old, driving $300,000 cars. You know, like, there's something very, I mean, kind of disgusting and off about it, but it tricks the brain. It makes the brain go, wait a second, I'm 45. Why don't I have 20 million? That guy's got 20 million. I certainly got a better SAT score than he did. And so women figured this out way before men did, because, you know, women, you know, way before now, they would look in women's magazines and be like, well, that's not my body. Like, it's kind of this shaming thing has come to men in the way of, you know, posting people's net worth and account balance. And it really triggers the brain for people to make really bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. And look, I know for myself how much money I've wasted on new automobiles throughout the course of my lifetime. And looking back, I'd rather have the money than the cars at this point.
Yeah.
It felt so good having that car. I never had a $300,000 car. I drew the line at about $50,000 to $70,000. Still do to this day. I just would not buy a car for more than that because it's just not worth it. And it's never worth it, regardless how bad a lease you get. A bad lease is always better than a good purchase. All right, because a car, when you go to sell it, is worth nothing. And all the prices of used cars are, it's rigged like every other market. But anyway, I digress. The point is, the definition of savings is delayed gratification. So delayed consumption. Consumption equals gratification. So it's delayed gratification. But how do you explain that to a 20, 30-year-old that they should wait when they think the world's going to end any day?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has an excellent shareholder base, with Ross Beatty owning 20%, insiders 5%, and resource capital funds 8%. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, you know, first of all, it's very difficult to explain anything to anyone under 30 years old, from the sense that the male brain is not fully formed until they're 27. The female brain gets fully formed at about 26. So this is why the military is filled with men and women below the age of 26 and 27. They don't do consequences that well. And this is also why you see really stupid things being done by, you know, teenagers and 20-somethings. It's because they don't get consequences, and they won't get it for, depending their age, 5 or 10 or 15 years. And then you can just fast forward to, you know, stupid choices. The richest man on the planet was sending dick pics 2 years ago, or whenever it was. And if there ever was someone who could understand consequences, it would be Jeff Bezos. And here he is doing something really stupid. So I think we don't quite fully, you know, get what consequences there are. And it's very difficult to teach that to anyone, let alone someone in their 20s and 30s. I do want to say something about the car thing, because I'm fascinated by cars. I buy a car. So I buy, my trend is, you know, buy a $50,000 car, keep it for 10 years, get rid of it, rinse, repeat. But my philosophy on cars is basically you can get an amazing car for 18 grand, right? You can buy a Honda Accord, a used Honda Accord, 4 years old, 18 grand. Whether it's an SUV version, but basically 18 is what gets you safe enough, perfect enough. Everything above 18 is 100% to do with what other people think of you and how much you want them to love you and like you. And I know this about myself. Like I bought a VW, which I call the Honda of Germany, which I'm told by some people that's not the right reference. I'm like, okay, the Kia of Germany. And
yeah, that's probably more like it.
And it's like, I know I did not, like, I was very consciously aware that I'm getting a new car because of how it makes me feel. Mm-hmm. as a kind of lack of not a bad thing, but conscious of like, yeah, I'm doing it because of a feeling. This is not, you know, teaching people the best way to manage their money. So, I mean, cars fascinate me because they're an expression of ourselves. Especially when you start spending six figures on a vehicle, leased or not, that tells you more about the person than probably anything else.
Yeah. Well, hey, I totally agree with you. I was going to say, if you have to get a new car and there's no used cars of that model, the ideal is to buy a 3-year, if you're buying a luxury car, and the only cars you should buy if you're going to hold them till they fall apart are Toyotas and Hondas, because those are the only cars that will not send you to the poorhouse trying to keep them running if you do a lot of miles. But aside from that, so that also means Acura and Lexus. But aside from that, the day you drive it out of the dealership, you know, your car is worth 20% less than it was when you bought it. So the key is to avoid, let somebody else take the hit. And when you buy I'm real fond of buying a 3-4 year old luxury car with under 20,000 miles and ideally under 10,000 if it's a convertible. I like convertibles because I like the sun. You know, you buy them for roughly 40% less than they were new. And then you get like a really good deal. The other alternative is you look for a lease swap or somebody that's leased a car and wants to get out. Normally they've put down a significant amount of money up front in terms of a non-refundable CapEx charge. Basically, you're buying down your monthly rate. And you look for one that has miles at least 25% more than what you drive per month. So in other words, if somebody's had a car, a BMW convertible, it's 2-3 years old, and it's got another 24 months left on the lease, and it's very low miles, you have very little risk on that car, and they've already taken the hit because they prepaid the depreciation. So that's the other way I look at it. But in any event, cars are horrible, and they're not an investment. They're purely a consumer item. It's the same deal. You buy a flat screen TV, the most expensive one on the market, you bring it home, it's worth $250 to pay somebody to dump it for you. You know, you buy that 88-inch flat screen for $4,000, it's worth $250 to $500 to get rid of it. And that's the difference between consumer goods. Whereas, you know, what I learned is when you buy assets to produce income, if you do it right, they'll produce enough income to actually keep you rolling in consumer goods for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I will say some of the people I respect most are people who have, you know, the $5 to $10 million net worth, and they drive the Honda Accord.
Well, I had a friend in Westchester County, you know his name if you saw it in the, if you saw his name, you'd know it. He's worth, nine figures, mid nine figures that I knew of. And he always drove a 5 or 6 year old Mercedes. But back then you could do it because they were much more reliable. Now they're all made of plastic. And if you don't have a newer car, at least with low miles, below 100,000, the car's going to blow up on you at the worst possible moment. Anyways, enough about cars because.
I know we're talking about the economy and the stock market, but this gets back to motivation, right? So the problem with the economy and economists are the assumptions they're making, right? One of the big assumptions all economists make, consciously or otherwise, is humans will do the best choice that helps them, however it's written in economic speak. And that's just not how we behave. We go out and, you know, people lease $15,000 a month houses so people will love them and like them. People lease cars at $2,000 a month so people will think, you know, look how amazingly successful they are. Like, we constantly make bad choices, certainly on the individual. But when you start looking at it on the macro of the, you know, 700 million people collectively, you know, if someone studies price and becomes a student of price, it's going to help them grow their money with more ease.
Hey, and just going back to that, a lot of our bad decision-making is encouraged by and subsidized by the government, by the Federal Reserve. When you have below market interest rates that enable you to rent, lease, everything in life is rented because you can't take it with you, but to lease for a period of time a vehicle that really should be about 50% higher monthly payments that enable you to buy a home in quotes because you and the bank own it together, and that enables you to make payments that are about a third to 40% less than they would be had the interest rate been at its natural level, not the level set by basically some government bean counters. If we had true pricing in that, we would have a lot better decision making than we have now, wouldn't we?
Absolutely. And I mean, it comes back to how much free choice do people think they actually have? I think most people would say, no, I make all my own choices. No, no one's telling me. But it's like, wait a second. Corn is free because the government subsidizes corn and grain growth in this country. Okay. So that means a large pizza at Domino's or, you know, Little Caesars is what, $6? Or an $8.99 for a family of four with, you know, a 2-liter thing of Pepsi. Like, there's not many worse things you can put in your body. And I don't mean to go down this rabbit hole, but it's like, so you're going to put a 2-liter thing of soda, I'm from the Midwest, pop, and simple carbs for $8.99 to feed your family. Like, that's going to be way cheaper than a balanced diet with protein, fruits, vegetables, and complex carbohydrates. So we absolutely are influenced by our society.
Yeah. And I always say, people say, well, we have free will. I said, no, we have the illusion of free will.
Yeah, we don't have free will.
Yeah, free will is like you're free to make any decision irrespective of your level of consciousness, but our decisions are dictated by our levels of consciousness. Bring this back to the stock market. Bring this back to how you help people actually make money and keep money from their investments, RC.
You know, the first thing I'll say is someone actually has to want to have a better experience, better performance, right? They want to be a student. They want to figure it out. So those that do, there's just three things I train people on. And it almost doesn't matter the order, but it usually goes with, I first train them to think with their eyes. I first train them to look at a price chart. And the reason this is incredibly important is because you have to have some way to filter information, right? So someone is wanting to invest and one person who they like says, get out. And the other person they like says, back up the truck. And they have no idea how to filter that otherwise through just shortcuts. Like, well, I really, really like this person. I only really like that person. So the first thing I train people to do is to read a price chart in a powerfully simple way, so they don't have to trust anyone. The second thing I train them to do, which in many ways is very unpopular, is to have them notice what words and what feelings are happening, which means they actually have to kind of be a little consciously competent on what words they're using, right? So if you came to me and said, the market, my stock is crashing. I'd say, can you tell me in math terms what's going on? Oh yeah, RC, it's down 2.61% today. Oh, okay. So first of all, just go ahead and tell me the different experience in your body saying down 2.61% and tell me the experience of it's crashing today. And I'll have them go through this. And by the way, these are mostly men in their 50s and 60s. And they'll go, oh, crashing. I thought my retirement wasn't going to work out. I thought I was going to have to be a greeter at Walmart. I thought I was going to have to move to Alabama from the Seattle area. I thought everything was going to end. Okay, thank you. And when you say your position's down 2.61%, what happens in your body? What do you mean? Exactly. Right. So it's very hard to get into the trauma and the drama when you say 2.61%, you know, and then I might ask him, and then what is that position up over the last year? Oh, 87%. Okay. So the second thing in just answering your question is I'm asking people to start to become aware of that angry roommate that they've been living with their whole life, that is just attempting to pull the temple down on their life every day. That's their internal dialogue. And just really question what words are being used. Because words create feelings, words create worlds. And most people are unaware of how toxic language they're being taught to use. Crash, boom, bust. Like those are scary words to the human brain. But when you shift them to, yeah, last year the market fell 34% over 30 days. And then it went up, you know, 76% over 9 months. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but it's going to be much harder for that human brain to pull the temple down on themselves. So then the third step is, so the first is you got to get to a price chart, right? The second step is acknowledge and notice what words are being used and how those are making you feel. And the third step is to take action, which, by the way, many times you take action based on price, not based on your gut, right? So if you're scared, but the thing you're in is not scared, then, you know, go for a walk. So taking action is based on the thing that you're in. Let's just say it's the S&P 500. Is the S&P 500 scared? No, it's going higher. I'm scared. Oh, you're scared. Okay, well, it's my money. No, I get that, but the market's not scared. You're scared. And by having them separate themselves from the market, they go, oh, got it. I'm scared. And then I'll ask them, so where's the scaredness coming from? Oh, I was on Twitter for 3 hours. Oh, okay.
All right. Say no more. So, all right. People want to connect with you. They go to fearlesswealth.com.
Yeah, it's super simple. Same website for over 2 decades. Just go to fearlesswealth.com. And again, it's for people who really want to figure it out, because those are the people. I started my company when I was 28. And really, it's not until someone becomes about 45 or 50 where they kind of start questioning what they've been taught when it comes to growing money. And when you're 45, 55, 60, you're pretty motivated to figure out how to keep it.
Yes, very true. So you got to act, invest like a 30-year-old, but act like a 60-year-old. Maybe that's the answer. In any event, what's your opinion? Send us your email to kl@carrylutz.com. Make sure you go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for a free newsletter. RC, always a thought-provoking and interesting discussion that we have. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.